Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of the worldwide leader in marble racing and WrestleMania reruns, ESPN.
Ryan Lambert, again, no big thing to say. Just I live at my house. That's it now.
I'm Sean McNew from The Athletic, home of content about movies and video games. And if anybody out there wants to come over and cut my hair, please let me know.
Oh, tell me you're about in, it, dude. Jesus.
You're in puck soup. I completely agree. I am I'm somebody who has fast growing hair to begin with, and I was already in sort of preparatory mode of having it grow out until right before the playoffs, then getting it cut. So I am I'm in the weeds, as they say, in my hair right now. Wow. And I'm gonna be like in a Ben Schwartz on Parks and Rec level of hair height within probably a week.
Well, as a bald man, I like to get my hair cut pretty frequently because I don't like the way it looks when it's even a little bit long. I often get my hair cut once a week.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I don't like it when it's long. And also, it's just like a nice thing. Like, it's nice to just go and sit and for an hour or whatever and relax. But
you feel like you get pampered a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
And, so now I haven't had my hair cut in like a month, and I look and feel insane.
I saw you the other day on webcam. You look like Danny DeVito now with your hair. It's on right. Taxi.
Yeah.
Sean, your hair doesn't strike me as one that I don't think I've ever seen you with, like, any kind of semblance of long hair.
Yeah.
So how's that working out?
Not great. I'm a short hair guy, and I'm like, part of the reason I'm a short hair guy is like my hair can only be short. As soon as it gets a little bit long, it just goes completely out of control and in weird directions, and it's not good. So my daughter for Christmas got me a Baltimore Ravens cap. Because I'm a 49ers fan and she's a Ravens fan, so this was like her trash talk
she got
Christmas present
ass
to me. And I'm currently wearing a Baltimore Ravens cap because it turns out that my desire to not have to look at my horrible haircut in when I walk by a mirror is supersedes my lifelong fandom for the 49ers. So sorry.
That is sacrifice.
Yeah,
that is sacrifice right there.
I've switched Harbaugh brothers. I am... I'm on Team Lamar going forward until I can find some clippers or a Flobee or anything.
That's right. Fuck off, Jimmy G. My hair is more important, he says to the Niners. Around the table real quick, where do you get your hair cut, Lambert?
There's just a barber near my old apartment, so now I have to like drive for 25 minutes to get or take the train for 25 minutes to get there. It sucks because it is basically the same amount of time taking the train or driving. So, you know, I'll do either one, but it's just like a small barber
shop. That reminds me though, like when I lived, those are the best ones. When I lived in, Maryland, I found a dentist that I really liked, like really liked, like the first dentist that made me really think that they understood my mouth. And for years, no matter where I lived around the D.C. area and then into my time while living in Manhattan, I would still go to that dentist. Like, that's how dedicated I was to that dentist. Yeah. So I understand the idea of, like, no matter where life takes you for your domicile, you may go back to an essential part of your existence, even though you don't live there anymore. Sean, where do you get your hair cut?
I go to a place not far from my house, and it's like this... It's a barbershop. It's this rotating cast of dudes who...
Like Magic Mike.
Not quite. not really quite with this group. They all speak a language that I do not speak, and they always seem surprised to see me when I walk in, that like somebody has come in. But they... They just wave me over to a chair, and like one of them randomly gets up and cuts my hair, and they always do a really good job. So I, yeah, and it's ideal because it's everything I want from a haircut, which is it's quick, it's quality, and nobody talks. So it's, yeah, it's awesome.
Oh, that's solid. When I was in Manhattan, I used to go to the New York Shaving Company a lot in Soho. And it was great because it was one, as we've all talked about, one large Russian man who, you know, spoke limited English. And I would tell him every time I'd go back, he would never remember who I am. So I would tell him I covered the Olympics in Sochi story over and over again. And then that's how we would make conversation. But the place was interesting because they used to sneak you plastic cups of Jack Daniels and other whiskeys.
Nice.
While you were getting your haircut. Good. Yeah, they kept a bottle behind the counter. So, sorry if I'm blowing up their spot. The fucking feds are going to break down their door when they reopen. This fucking Elliot Ness is going to show up at the barbershop. So then when I moved out here to the Bay Area, like I didn't want to go to like a Supercuts or a salon or some shit. So I went on Yelp and I Yelped whiskey barber, right? To find out if there was somebody on Yelp that may have also blown up a spot to say, hey, they sneak you booze while you're getting a haircut, which sounds alcoholic, but to speak to Lambert's point is actually part of the pampering. So I found a place in Los Gatos and I went there and I'm getting my haircut. And I'm, you know, kind of waiting for the whiskey, get the haircut. It's all done. Guy's like, so how'd you find us? I'm like, well, you know, I went on Yelp and, put in barber and whiskey and you guys came up and I don't know. I thought you were one of these places that gives people whiskey. And he's like, there's only one person we ever gave whiskey to here. I'm like, who? He said the head coach of the 49ers. I'm like, really?
Wow.
So I don't know how this legend escaped the barbershop, but Yelp knows.
Apparently the head coach of the 49ers is out there doing Yelp reviews of...
I don't like this store. They sell Ravens hats. But yeah, that was the thing. Fucking
that's crazy.
Head coach of the Niners got whiskey at the barbershop.
Do we know which head coach it was? Because Mike Singletary strikes me as a Yelp guy.
Yeah. I don't think Bill Walsh back in the day was figuring out his Yelp reviews, but no, I don't remember I assume it was the current one. But yeah, that was the situation. But yeah, any barbershop that offers you booze is top of the pops in my book. All right. What's happening in the NHL during this pause? Well, nothing. They extended the quarantine longer as expected. A few more folks on the Senators had a positive test as expected. I don't know. Anything else going on? We talked about the draft, I guess. Did we talk about the draft last time? Canceled at that point? They canceled the draft. Or they postponed the draft. I guess Montreal's going to get it in like 2 years because they're probably going to give it to Seattle next year. So they can do the whole draft expansion draft shebang. I think we briefly talked about it because we talked about doing it in a hotel. Like they did it for the Crosby one. And then in the early 70s, they did it over the phone, which is how we got the Taro Tsujimoto thing.
Which is what the NFL is doing, because their draft is in April. And as of right now, they have not delayed it. They're going to go ahead, but they're going to do... I think the way they phrased it was a virtual draft. So I don't know. That seems to suggest some sort of online component. But yeah, I mean, you do it in a conference call. You really don't need everybody there. For any reason other than it's just kind of a cool way to get everybody in front of a bunch of fans and do a good TV show, but
get Bettman booed.
Yeah.
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 Right. Now they're going to have the GMs do it. It won't be as fun.
Yeah. It won't be as fun at all. Do you think there's a way the NHL could do a virtual draft and still put it on television? Or is it going to be like, we find out what happened and via press release the next day?
Oh, you could definitely do it on TV. They'll find it.
Yeah, you just don't – like you can, you know, have everybody set up a webcam or something and then, you know, Kyle Dubas can go, hey, wave at the camera and say, oh, we're taking this kid from Erie or whatever. And, you know, and then you can the kid on Skype and go, okay, now you say what it's like to be dread. And, you know,
oh, I love it because that opens the door for a lot of Patrick Laine-esque interviews like they had at the draft lottery.
Yeah.
He's on the floor at like 2 a.m. in Finland and the webcam is too close to his face. So that's a very exciting prospect. I will miss the great mystery of who will the pimply-faced teen kiss first, his sister, his girlfriend, or his mom. We won't get that by not having an actual draft. We also won't get the drama of who the team will send up to announce the pick.
Yeah.
That's another draft thing I love.
We won't get to hear them.
Which executive's 14-year-old kid is going to have to hold it, and he's like wearing his own jersey, and he's holding the kid's jersey. Oh, yeah. Gotta love that shit.
We won't be able to congratulate the host city, because there won't be one, or congratulate the Stanley Cup winner, because there may not be one.
That's right.
So I guess we'll still get like the shout out to the draft party back at like Gus's Ribs and Barbecue.
Nobody will be in attendance, of course.
That's right. Yeah. So yeah, we're gonna miss.
Maybe a shout out to a virtual draft
party. The one thing I'm gonna miss the most is this is gonna be tough because we won't have like the arena DJ playing completely inappropriate music on day two while all these kids are like. Watching their dreams be shattered, and like he's playing "Best Day of My Life" when it's like round six, and like guys are crying in the stands because they realize they're not going to be drafted. The worst one ever was in the seventh round of this was a few years ago, and he started playing "Slide" by the Goo Goo Doll. Like, why don't you slide? Like, yeah, they're all sliding, buddy. Like, they know they're aware.
Angela Esposito's like, fuck off.
Yeah.
Now my question is, if we do a virtual draft, is there a way where Bettman can kind of like break into the feed in a little like bubble and be like, we have a trade to announce, almost like the paperclip on Microsoft Word? Like, that's what I need. That's what I need.
Is there to be a little bit of innovation. Moderating powers so he can just mute somebody else while they're in the middle of talking and announce a trade.
How great would that be?
Exactly.
Like if the virtual draft was a Zoom meeting and it like Bettman came on and immediately like you hear all these boos and then he just mutes them. Like, how funny would that be if he just
that's great.
Mute. All right, thanks. And just
Bettman working
launches.
Out his around the horn fantasies.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's the GM most likely to categories. GM most likely not know how to use Zoom. Rutherford?
Oh yeah. He's going to try to be pulling it up on his flip phone.
I mean,
he's not.
He's calling in.
You go Rutherford or Poyle for the old guy, but don't sleep on Jim Benning. I could see Jim Benning. Jim Benning gives off powerful, don't know how to mute my own microphone vibes. I could see that.
GM most likely to forget his webcam on while he goes to take a piss.
That might be Benning. That actually.
Nah, I got it. Yeah, there's only one answer. Pierre Dorion.
Pierre Dorion, just go and take a big dump live, and that'll be the first draft where everybody remembers number two.
Okay,
there it is. Some scuttlebutt and innuendo about the NHL trying to maybe mimic the NBA by holding neutral site playoffs. In the sense of being in a controlled environment, maybe in a place where there isn't the whole hell of a lot of coronavirus activity.
Mm-hmm.
The NBA going to a place that has a lot of it in Las Vegas, potentially. But this has been a thought of mine for a while because, you know, the simpler you make the logistics of a season restart, I think the more likely a restart is. And if you're not going to have fans in the building, why the fuck do you have to be in different cities?
Yeah.
Why? So these guys can sleep in their own beds? It makes no sense.
It makes no sense at all. Plus, every time any player who's involved in the playoffs goes anywhere, they're at risk of getting infected, which means they're at risk of testing positive, which means they're at risk of their entire team being quarantined, which wipes out your playoffs. So, I really think it's if we do see hockey come back, it's not only going to be a neutral site scenario, but it'll be like this Olympic Village idea where the players, like 16 teams will go in and they'll be basically quarantined. And as your team's eliminated, okay, then you can go home. But until then, I don't see how you do a 2-month tournament taking the risk that 6 weeks in somebody's going to test positive and you got to put the whole thing on hold or scrap it again. Like I don't think people are. I've been maybe a little too pessimistic as far as saying that this isn't going to, they're not going to come back at all. But I think people are maybe not getting their heads around how weird and different it might have to be for them to get back.
It'll be a television product more than anything else, yes. Right?
For a league that gets most of its revenue from the gate and not from TV, right. Which is why it is at least possible that I still think we could see a scenario where the NBA comes back and does its playoffs and the NHL doesn't.
Ooh. What are you going to say, Ryan?
I was going to say I think they shouldn't come back if that – like even under the idea of, oh, yeah, we're all going to go to a big ranch with a hockey rink in Wyoming where there's nobody around for 300 miles, all that shit, and we're just going to set everybody up in hotels or whatever, Like you said, they make most of the revenue in this league through the gate, so the only way for them to really make money on it, on this, is to, get NBC to give them the money, right? And,
NBC already did.
Well, right, I don't know, is NBC going to be like, oh, we're kind of need some of that money back since you didn't have... eighth of your season and
they're gonna Cheesecake Factory them is what you're saying. Yeah. They're just gonna say we're not gonna pay your rent.
Yeah, and so
right.
it really why put all the, look, the San Jose Sharks already put everybody in. It's a crazy coincidence that the two teams that have tested positive now, for coronavirus are also the ones that played back to back nights in San Jose after.
But hold on. I completely agree with you that what they did was irresponsible. But I said the same thing. I will put the caveat out there. They're also the two teams that used the visitor locker room at Staples Center after the Jazz did. So like the possibility exists they could have gotten it in LA too.
Sure. Okay. But. With that in mind.
No, but I agree. It was irresponsible to play three games after the county was like, don't play games.
And so there are more important things than getting these 300 million dollars that they might make otherwise back, right? And so the idea that they're going to do this for pennies on the dollar and get everybody to maintain quarantine for weeks at a time and that kind of, I don't know. I just like at that point, I don't like to obviously say, hey, let's not do hockey until fucking October. But
right.
I just can't imagine why you would do it.
Is there a sort of a location you could use that you'd feel comfortable that could be isolated enough where they aren't being exposed and they could create sort of a hockey Olympic Village type situation that also has a rink? I mean, where would that be? I mean, I imagine it's somewhere in Canada, right? Like Saskatchewan or somewhere like that.
There could be. I mean, I think it's not so much that you have to be in a location where, where the infection rates are super low so much as it is. Yeah. You've just got to keep everybody isolated. And right. My guess is there's probably, you could do it. I don't know. Do we still have facilities in Salt Lake City, for example? Like that, I'm assuming that isn't exactly like what was left behind from the Olympics, but usually with that sort of thing, something stays behind.
Listen, what governor has this shit on lockdown? Cuomo. Where do you go? Fucking Lake Placid, baby. There it is.
Yeah, New York seems like they're doing fantastic. So,
how about the Hardy
Hardy compound in Carolina, Matt Hardy's compound in Carolina, where they held wrestling matches.
We could do that.
That could be a possibility.
Yeah, it's an option.
New York City is a mess, but that's De Blasio's fault. Cuomo's on point. We all know that.
Yeah, I'm just I think you would not, because I mean, it's not like you need a great arena. Right, you need 200 by 85, decent facilities for the players and enough space to get cameras in there that'll make for a decent broadcast. That's it. It's not like you're looking at all the you're narrowing it down to all the rinks that hold 20,000 people. You you don't need that.
You don't need it, right?
Yeah, I can't wait to hear every fucking every shift about, you know, the ice quality, because they've played 68 games on this high school rink in the last 2 weeks. It's not great out there, and also it's the middle of August. Oh, okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
Hey, to generate more revenue, make your fucking rink look like them European rinks. Just put ads all over the ice. Who gives a shit? Just juice the revenue. Sell a bunch of ads on the ice, on the players. Who cares? Do it one time. Make the players look like NASCAR drivers one time. Just to generate revenue. Yeah,
that's the thing I'm most concerned with here is fucking hockey-related revenue. Yep, for sure.
Well, that's it.
Sad part is that's might be what a lot of the players are most concerned about, because I think they're starting to realize how escrow is going to work this year, and it's going to be not good. And I think whenever you hear somebody say, yeah, we should finish the regular season, I don't think they're saying that because they're super concerned about the integrity of the draft lottery. Like, they understand that they need it. They need to bank as much as they can. But it's I'm at the point now where obviously this year is the big concern, and we all want to see the Stanley Cup order. We don't want to see another blank panel on the Stanley Cup. But I'm starting to worry about next year, as far as not just whether they play or not, but what that looks like. And I remember when this started, I remember saying, you know, this year is going to be chaos, but by next year things will be back to normal. And I don't really think that anymore, as far as just as far as the revenue, like how many corporate partners are you going to lose? How much is attendance going to go down? How many
season ticket holders?
Yeah, people aren't going to want to pay that. And a lot of people aren't going to want to go sit in a building, even if it's December and it's all clear and they've told us, we're all good. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to be like, you know what? No, my idea of fun is not sitting around with 20,000 people anymore. I don't want to do that. So I'm at the point now where I'm starting to think like there's going to be long-term significant revenue impact. And unfortunately, because we have a cap tied to revenue, revenue impact means roster impact. It means everything. So it's going to be rocky.
I mean, they didn't have to do this after 05, but they're going to have to figure out a way to get people back to the rink on their dime, right? Like, season ticket holders, for the most part, a lot of them have put in their deposits. A lot of them are already, like, you know, dedicated for next year. Who knows how that's going to work? I agree with you, though, on the distancing thing. And I've been thinking a lot about this. Like, right now, the entire corporate world is trying to find ways to pitch their products to people that are scared, that want comfort, and that are stuck at home. And so that's why we talked about in the recent episode about how all the commercials are like, during the troubles, we want to give you Burger King kind of bullshit. I think the next step after that, once we start to come out of this, is how do we guarantee your safety? How do we make you feel safe coming back to our restaurant, going back to our theme park, going back to the arena? And I wonder what that looks like. Does it get to the point where people's temperatures are being taken on the way into the game? Like, I don't know. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that to ensure your business is still being patronized, that they take some of those steps.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a possibility.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's a good question, but I don't know the answer to it. And it's going to be, like I said, even a few weeks ago, I was thinking, you know what, who knows what the summer looks like, but by the first week of October, things will be back to normal. And now, for various reasons, that feels very optimistic.
Yeah, potentially. You asked what the players are most worried about, and we've obviously had a round of video conference interviews with NHL players, and I think the thing we can say with some certainty out of those interviews is the thing that they are most concerned about is Chukaraska's flatulence, which was the biggest news in hockey in the past week.
Yeah, no wonder this guy's looking to retire when his freaking contract's up. We're all yelling at him about shit in his pants.
This is Zdeno Chara blowing up Tukarask, blowing up, if you will, Tukarask's spot as a serial farter on the Bruins bus or plane. I guess it's probably a plane, yes. Not necessarily a bus.
Too many chicken wings.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice
to Rask.
Nice to see the Wings give somebody trouble in that division other than the Habs. Ha ha ha.
That was good. I appreciated your dad joke.
Yeah.
I know that Tuukka spoke about it and was whatever with it on a Boston radio show, but I was trying to put myself in his shoes and have like the captain of your team tell the world that you have a flatulence problem. And I couldn't imagine like what his phone looked like for the next 5 hours. I felt bad for him. And I also felt bad that at some point he's going to have to be on the ice with someone like Brendan Gallagher, who will now have this material at his fingertips for chirps. I think that's the other issue going forward for Tuukka Rask. These video interviews were pretty good. I mean, obviously the NHL is not asking anything all that groundbreaking.
Yeah.
But I did appreciate the choice of background on some of these calls, in the sense that some guys picked like the most bare wall in their house, and other guys like Sidney Crosby did the interview in front of pictures of himself winning the Stanley Cup, which is exactly what I would fucking do.
Yeah. I don't know if he's ever been on the show before, but DJ Bean, who works for Comcast Sportsnet here in Boston and used to cover the Bruins, that he did like one of those things where, you know, same thing, every reporter now, when they do a video hit from their house, they're like, oh, I'm in front of this big bookcase. Look how many books I read and stuff. And he just put up on his wall, like a piece of cardboard he had written books on. He just wrote the word books. And I was like, yeah, that
move.
Yeah, that's the way to play it, because everybody's just being, yeah, we get it, guys. You have a lot of books.
I was thinking about like, what book would I put behind me if I had the bookcase thing, and if it didn't cost me my job, I figured it would be like gobs and gobs of porno VHS tapes would be the thing that
see,
I would
that's
put
funny.
Behind me.
That's funny, but like no, if you're trying to look smart, you just be like, oh, I have a Joyce's Ulysses behind me. I've been reading that, the freaking bell jar, and everybody's like, wow, this guy's really smart. He gets it.
Four bookcase shelves filled with Mein Kampf. Like, would that be bad?
Yeah, I feel like that would probably
be not great. That might raise a couple of flags, yeah.
It might. Well, one in particular. But I mean, yeah. I am interested in the curation of backgrounds and who's presenting what. I do think that most players at least put a little bit of thought into it, which I appreciate. Like Brady Tkachuk did it in front of like a Tkachuk bookcase that had like a bunch of Keith's Winnipeg Jets shit on it, which is cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
I appreciate the effort.
It's, having been there, like I appreciate it. Cause I've been in that situation where like I'm going on like some online TV thing and the producer's like, hey, can you shift your camera like half an inch to the right? And I'm like, no, I cannot. Because then you will see what my house really looks like and not this very thin slice that I have cleaned and made look presentable. So, no, this is what you got.
My mom refuses to FaceTime her grandkids because she did it once and thought that she looked fat. And I'm like, do you understand how webcams work? Like, just angle that shit, man. I realize my mom's too old to remember MySpace. Like, just put that shit on the ceiling and look up at it. Who gives a shit? Like, there are ways to get around this.
You're telling your mom also, to do the duck lips thing. Yeah,
okay. Yeah, that's right. Mom, put a filter on. You'll look great. The other thing that I'm tired of, I mentioned this on Twitter last night, is the local news here in the Bay Area is doing this thing where there's one person inside the studio with incredible lighting and makeup, the best cameras, the teleprompter, the graphics, the whole thing. And then, like, her older male partner on the broadcast is in his rec room with like old football helmets behind him, wearing a three-piece suit with horrible internet and terrible lighting, like reading a script off his cell phone while he's on the webcam. We don't need to do this. Like, we could just have one person give the news. We don't have to have them both participate at all times to keep this fucking fantasy up. Just it's okay. Like, no one – we all understand if, you know, Jocko Johnson can't be on the fucking Channel 5 news for one night. It's okay.
I'm with you.
Yeah, exactly. They doing that shit up there yet?
Actually, every newscast looks like that in Canada all the time. So.
It's just one guy at his cottage.
Yeah, it's just a blank background, and like, yeah, that's Canadian television, man. Like, that's our primetime drama. It's just like two guys in front of a blank wall that has like a picture of a skyscraper window taped from that we printed off from the internet. That's what we got going.
That makes sense. I do think that TSN's doing a pretty good job with their like webcam life. Like when you watch Insider Trading and Pierre and Frank and all them are in their little homes talking to like Gino Retter or whatever. Like, I think that actually looks pretty good. It's not too bad. So I do appreciate that. NHL player poll, NHL PA player poll came out. What struck you as odd? Anything?
I mean, I it was weird that they released the 2015 one because Carey Price was rated as the best goaltender in the league.
He wins in perpetuity because they all like him. They all feel bad for him because he's stuck in Montreal, and they remember him winning the gold medal. That's why he wins, right?
Yeah, it's because they don't know how to judge goaltending any better than any of the rest of us do.
That, to me, is the ultimate thing of like, oh, I guess you know hockey better than this guy who played in the NHL. Fucking seems like I do.
McDavid won best forward. He got the second year in a row. He got the largest percentage of any vote in winning his category. That's how many people think that he's the best forward.
He is by far the best forward. But if you need to win one game, he's not the guy that you want.
Because apparently win a face-off either. Well, that like, too. Because he's not a complete player. I read about that today, the fact that he's not a complete player. I don't really give a shit that he's not a complete player. Like, do your thing that you do best. It kind of reminds me of the Ovechkin argument. Like, oh, he doesn't play defense. Who gives a fucking shit?
Yeah, he scores 55 goals a year, so I don't care.
Complete player has always meant the player whose ability in the offensive zone and the defensive zone are closest to each other, right? Like, if you're like an A-minus at both ends, then you're a complete player. If you're an A-plus offensive player and like a B-plus in the defensive zone, you're not a complete player, even though you are. You've got to have that Patrice Bergeron seesaw. Yeah.
You're not allowed to be a complete player until you're like 24, 25 years old.
No, that's a fair point. In the piece I wrote, it actually took Crosby until 2015 to break into the top 10 for the Selkie. So you're talking 2016. So you're talking like 11 years of his career before he got recognized for his defensive prowess. But I also think, and this is such an elementary measure of it, but I mean, I think faceoffs matter to a lot of guys because Sid figured out like how to do faceoffs after his first 2 years in the league, and he's been over 50% in 12 of his last 13 seasons. McDavid's never been above 50% yet as a faceoff guy. So I'm sure that probably factors into it too. But I don't know. Like, who gives a shit if he's not complete? He fucking scores 130.
Yeah, I also think the quality of the team around you makes you go, oh yeah, that's a complete player. That's the guy I want to win one game for me. You know, if McDavid is on the fucking Bruins, everybody's like, no, there's a complete player. That guy can win you a hockey game. Oh, okay, yeah.
But there have been only two players who have ever won the Selke with more than 100 points. And that kind of gives you this, like, we're looking for you to come in at like 70, 80. Maybe we can do 90s, but let's not go crazy beyond that.
Did Wayne win a Selke?
No.
Was he one of them?
Of course not. He's never. The only two are Fedorov did it twice, and Gilmore holds the record in 93, which was basically, that was him getting the Hart Trophy runner-up back then, because everybody was season, Dougie. That was great how you resurrected the Leafs, but Mario Lemieux had 160 points and beat cancer, so here's please take this consolation prize.
I feel like Ryan O'Reilly kind of got that like consolation MVP award too last
year.
Yeah,
he did.
The Selke. Mm-hmm. Victor Hedman won best defenseman over John Carlson. And Roman Josi, who probably is going to beat Carlson for the Norris, got 9% of the vote for third place.
Do we think Josi's going to win the?
I do.
The Norris. Okay,
dude, you have like half PHWA writing for the Athletic, and they put Josi over.
It was like 53-45%. Like it was a very close. It was a reasonably close vote. So if you assume that. The old timer branch that tends to look at points is on Carlson's side. I think that's going to be closer than you think.
I don't know, man. It's hard to shake the all points, no defense rap that defensemen get when it comes to the Norris. Like, I feel like he's going to be the next Mike Green that we look back at the season and we're like, wow, what a fucking historic offensive explosion this guy had. And then,
yeah, but Mike Green wasn't bad defensively. John Carlson actually is. Like look at any of the on ice, percentages and that kind of thing. He's not good defensively, and he's not good enough defensively to cover for the fact that he's playing behind some guys who are also not good defensively. So
right, but I think his offensive year is that good where it may supersede.
Yeah, you could be wrong about that. That's fine.
If you want to make the argument that Josi's the better all-around defenseman this year, that's fine.
Well, Ryan Ellis offense is, but okay, sure.
But Ryan Ellis was hurt for like half the fucking year, though, wasn't he?
Can we just also point out that Mike Green was great for a couple of years, but he lost the Norris in those years to Duncan Keith and Zdeno Chara. Like, I feel like that is going to hold up okay. I don't think 20 years from now people are going to be looking back going, I can't believe Mike Green.
Yeah, like, he probably should have won
to
at
those
least
two
one
Hall
of them.
Of Famers.
And, yeah, like, it's like all the times, like, the third guys lost to Bobby Orr. And it's like, well, he's a great defenseman, too. And everybody's like, yeah, but it's Bobby Orr. Like, what are you supposed to...
In 2010, the top five was Duncan Keith, Mike Green, Drew Doughty, Nick Lidstrom, and Chris Pronger. Like, yeah. I don't know, man. I feel like he
did. And one of those years, believe me, I'm a big Mike Green defender, but one of those years, Green also only played like 65, 67 games, something like that. So,
yeah.
That
year
also
he had
hurt 30, him that one
31
year.
Goals. The year he had 31 goals, he probably should have won. But again, like you said, I mean, it's like people
goals,
that are like,
good Lord.
I know. It's like people that say, well, Cujo never won a Vezina. Well, like, no shit. Like,
yeah,
did you see who he's up against
for
the entirety of his career?
Yeah.
Yeah. Price won best goalie again. Like, it just, whatever. It's like default setting.
I mean, but the guys in the top four, I would say maybe Vasilevsky deserved it this year. He was great. But the rest of them, Bobrovsky had an awful season. Fleury had an awful season. Price was fine. But okay, sure.
Yeah. But it's reputation. Like, they're.
Yeah, it's 100%.
Like, Connor Hellebuck's going to have to earn it for a few years before. You know what? I'm looking at, not to go back to it, but all this Mike Green talk. Do you realize? He had 31 goals. Kevin Hatcher had 34 goals one year. And didn't get a single first place vote for the Norris.
Wow.
He finished right now. I mean, it was like 93, so like that was in the numbers were crazy. But he lost to Chelios, Bork, and Larry Murphy, so that's three Hall of Famers.
Yeah, what are you going to do, right?
But still, right. The fact that back then you could score 34 goals as a defenseman and like five
Not
voters were
close.
Like, I'll throw you a second place. He showed up on 7 ballots that year. Like, that's, holy smokes.
Yeah, it's fucked up. I'm happy they didn't put Jonathan Quick.
Oh yeah,
with you. Yeah, you know, I'm happy we're past that.
Those
that
days
era.
Are gone, Greg. That's his ship has sailed.
If you have to one game, who's the one player you'd want on your team at any position? Crosby, of course, wins. McDavid second. MacKinnon is third, which I found really interesting because MacKinnon really hasn't won anything yet. You know, and everybody else is sort of like. McDavid's just, you know, a freak, but like Crosby and Bergeron are the other two guys in the top four. I found that to be kind of interesting. Any position, you'd figure there'd be a defenseman that sneaks in somewhere.
Or I guess a goalie if there was one that stood out. But I'd find this, you're right. I mean, MacKinnon, I love MacKinnon, but it is weird to me that somebody would pick him over McDavid or Crosby. But he got 4% of the vote. So that could literally just be like the Avalanche players voting for the guy. You know, Crosby probably voted for McKinnon because he's can't vote for himself and yeah, that sort of thing. But it is weird. Like, it's weird that McDavid is overwhelmingly the best forward, but if you've got one game to win, Crosby pretty significantly beats him. Like, it would seem like those would be measuring kind of the same thing, but I guess
proof of concept.
I guess not.
McDavid's had one playoff appearance, like as far as like a season in which he made the playoffs, and Crosby has two Conn Smythes and a few gold medals and fucking all that other shit going on too. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more proof of concept than anything.
Right, but Connor McDavid won a playoff round with the Edmonton Oilers. So
right, that's like true.
Difficulty wise, yeah,
that's winning three Stanley Cups. You're right. I'm completely right. The two categories that probably got the most attention out of this players poll: Brad Marchand wins best trash talker and worst trash talker, and
didn't that
second place
last
in both categories.
Yep,
it did. It's second the second straight year it's happened, and this year Drew Doughty was also second place for best trash talker and worst trash talker. Is this just players not understanding what worst trash talker is supposed to mean? Or is it like Marchand deals in such volume that he gets to win both categories?
Right? Yeah, like, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right?
Like, yeah. You can't – trash talk should not have like a really high success percentage. You're not opening yourself up enough and trying enough things. But it's also like, yeah, like if somebody chirps me in a way that really infuriates me, is that good trash talking or is that bad trash talking? Like if he's out there talking about my family or something, does that make him the best or the worst, or is it the same thing? And
right. Worst would be like they're trying to shit talk you and you don't care. Like that to me would be the worst trash talk.
Right, exactly. Yeah, worst would be like some lady he's throwing like some lame joke at you from like, and you're like, dude, get it. But we should also point out the worst trash talk, though, Marchand wins with 10%. The other votes was 70%. I would love to see that list because you know it's just a long list of guys getting
it's
one vote.
700 people. Yeah, it's like half the fucking league.
I want to know, like, that's the story I want to read, is that list and like the story behind it of like, what did this guy say to you one time that has stuck with you for years that like you always put his name down as the worst trash talker?
Exactly.
I was surprised at the lack of Tkachuks on this. I don't know if
me too.
I get trash talk is different than agitation.
Yeah,
so
being
maybe
an
that's
asshole.
It, but I would have thought, But there's overlap, so I don't know.
That's why I enjoyed the 8 votes that Tkachuk and Doughty got for best bromance in the league.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
That's a perverse fucking vote right there. I do enjoy that. But
yeah.
There you go.
Just because you know that's going to annoy the crap out of those two guys, that there's like 8 people out there who are like, it's all kayfabe. And
you guys are forever linked together. But trash talk, man. Just fucking, it's a beautiful thing in hockey. Have that shit ringing in your ears. Speaking of your ears, today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Raycon.
Pretty good.
Wasn't bad.
Pretty good.
That was good.
Yeah,
that's solid.
Look around you. It's a wireless world, and everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds before you go dropping hundreds of dollars, because you ain't want to be doing that now, on a pair of earbuds. You want to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. You already know that Raycon earbuds start about half the price of other premium wireless earbuds in the market. The newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are their best ones yet, with 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pricing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. Again, we've talked about these earbuds on this show before. I have a pair. I love them. I love them more than any other wireless headphones, earbuds I've ever had in my life. I've unfortunately had to go running a lot during this because they closed the gym in my apartment building, which I thought was going to stay open in a sneaky, clandestine way, but not to be. I hate running. It's my least favorite way to work out. But you know what? These earbuds have made it a lot more tolerable because they ain't falling out my ears. And I hate when earbuds fall out of my ears.
They sent me some, and I can tell you that they are getting the thumbs up from my wife, who immediately stole them and has been using them for weeks.
They're tremendous. Yeah. And they're super comfortable, perfect for on-the-go listening, perfect for taking phone calls. And you know what? Here's the thing you got to know most of all. The company was co-founded by Ray J, hence Raycon. And celebrities like Cardi B and Snoop Dogg are also obsessed with their Raycons. Here's the deal. You get the latest and greatest from Raycon, and you get 15% off your odd order.
at buyraycon.com/puck. Buyraycon, all one word, .com/puck for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Look, we all know what's going on. We're all stuck at home. If you have shitty headphones or shitty earbuds, this is a affordable, solid way to upgrade during all this mess. And again, if you're someone that's trying to figure out your way to work out and needs to find a good pair of earbuds that ain't going to fall out your head, I very much endorse the Everyday E25 earbuds from Raycon. Buyraycon.com/puck for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. All right, so The Athletic gave us something to chew on this week, which was the top 100 sports movies of all time. A clicker, as they say in the business.
Is that what we say in the business?
That, I mean, you know, I say fake news in the business, but other people say a clicker, I think.
Now, is clicker, is that not to be confused with clickbait, which is when you write anything that anyone might be interested in?
Or disagree with, slightly.
And tweet it out. Yeah. And people are like, yeah, this tweet is clickbait. It's a tweet.
I tweeted out a link to that McDavid column that I was talking about earlier before we did the show, and somebody responded with, quote, please click to my website, end quote. I'm like, how the fuck do you think links work? Like what is...
Yeah, you know, that guy just correctly described a process that you were trying to encourage.
Good job.
It's like, does that happen every time he goes on Google? Oh, look at all these. Please click to my website.
Yeah. Well, at least he got that. He wasn't one of the people who thinks that, like, when you tweet out, like, who are the 10 best players to ever, that it's like an invitation for them to just guess. Yeah. It's like, no, dude, you're supposed to click the
link through,
and
right?
Then, you know, they're like, Wayne Gretzky, question mark? Yeah. Yeah, he's on there. You got it, but you're supposed to...
Now, Greg, does that make him... The fact that you're mad about it hours later, does that make him a good or bad trash talker?
Yeah. I think it makes him a good trash talker because... Okay. Willful ignorance is a very easy path to infuriating me, and probably more than just me. So I'll put him down as he's number two in good and number four in bad.
Got it.
On my rankings. So the best sports movie of all time was Rocky. Did I remember that correctly?
You did, but they are wrong. That's
yes.
I mean, it's not even... is it even the second best boxing movie ever?
To give you guys an idea, the Athletic, we ranked 100 movies, and I think Ryan said he disagrees with, like, up to 5 or 6 of them. So it's going to be...
I would say a lot of the list was pretty good, but there were some really baffling ones. And when you start off with Rocky number one over Raging Bull... one of maybe the 10 greatest American films of all time. It's odd, if nothing else.
The top 10 movies of all time, sports movies of all time. Rocky, number one. Then in descending order, Raging Bull, Hoop Dreams, which is one of the better picks that they've made in the whole list. Bull Durham, fine.
No, four.
And then we get to fucking Miracle at number five. Come on.
Outrageous.
Not even the best hockey movie. And the cinematography is great. Like, no doubt, the hockey scenes in Miracle are probably the best presentation of hockey we've ever seen. And Kurt Russell should have gotten an Oscar nomination for playing Herb Brooks. But the problem with the movie is that it's basically like a one-man show.
And it's very cookie-cutter. Like, the thing with that movie is it takes two things – I really like, which is college hockey and the Soviet Union, and puts them together, and I am dissatisfied with the result. So
if they lost you with that formula.
That's what I'm saying.
I just think that no other character in the movie is that fleshed out. Like, not Patricia Clarkson's, not like fucking Jim Craig. Again, Kurt Russell's brilliant, and the movie looks great. But I think Slapshot superior.
Of course,
I think
it is.
You can make the argument that other hockey movies like The Mighty Ducks and Goon are actually
something I would revisit before Miracle.
The real thing to say about Miracle is it is, because it's a Disney movie, it is very much in the vein of every other Disney inspirational sports
underdogs
movie.
Overcoming
It's very cookie cutter with again a phenomenal central performance that is, I think, probably the only reason it's really remembered even outside of the hockey world.
Blasphemous as it is, you could make the argument that the movie about the Soviets, Red Army, is a better flick than Miracle.
Oh, 100. It definitely is. That's one of the great sports documentaries of all time, let alone hockey. So,
number six is The Big Lebowski, and I'll allow it. I think that's definitely a sports movie. Bowling plays such a central role in that movie. I don't think I've ever considered it to be a sports movie before this list, so I give The Athletic credit for opening my eyes to that fact. Would you agree with that?
Bit of a stretch.
I mean, there's a fantasy sequence with bowling. A lot of the plot is driven by
the
bowling alley. I'm not telling you. I'm telling the audience that may be skeptical about the idea of Big Lebowski being a sports movie, but I think it might be. I dig it. If so, I mean, why not put it in the top 10? Because it's fucking tremendous. Breaking Away, number 7. Number 8, a TV show called O.J. Made in America that won the Oscar for Best Documentary Feature in 2016.
Yeah, so I think that's what makes it a film. I would say the fact that it was, like, theatrically released and that kind of thing.
I realize I'm saying this as an ESPN employee. And I know it's blasphemy because it is our Oscar, and we should be very proud of that achievement. And if the Academy does deem it to be a film, it is a film. But I feel like a film should be something where you can sit in a theater in one sitting and watch it. And this movie, air quotes that are creating gusts of wind like the mighty Mothra, has a runtime of 7 hours and 47 minutes. Come on. I'm sitting in a theater for that.
6 minutes longer than like every Marvel movie from the last few years.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, it's...
I said when this won the Oscar that the next season of Game of Thrones should just be released in one theater for an entire day.
Yeah, didn't they do that? Like, it, when we say it came out in a theater, like it was like one theater in L.A.
They showed it in a theater,
I think, December 31st or something.
In New York and L.A., yeah. They played it, like, during one day to make it eligible. When We Were Kings, number 8. That's fine. That's a great documentary. And then this begins our exercise for the rest of the list, which is too high, too low. I'm going to give you some movies that made the list. You tell me too high, too low, or just right. We'll throw just right in there, too. Number 10, 1989's Major League, Charlie Sheen baseball comedy. Too high or too low or just right?
It's too high. I mean, it's good. It's good. It's very funny and stuff like that, but it's a little too high. 10, you said?
10, yeah.
10, crazy. Yeah. I'm not good for the too high, too low, because I haven't seen most of these movies. I love Major League, and I think there is – I think I'm happy to see where it is, because I the genre of just like goofy comedy, like comedy for the sake of comedy, not even something where it's like, yeah, but it's also a good movie and it's funny. Like, it's just dumb and funny, and that's all it is a genre that doesn't get enough respect. So I was actually happy to see Major League up that high. I'm gonna say it's just right.
I agree. Like, it's ahead of Caddyshack, which it can't be. Caddyshack
is a movie that, have you watched that recently? There are huge stretches of it that do not hold up at all.
They don't hold up, but they held up at the time, though. It's like saying Blazing Saddles can't be considered one of the best comedies of all time.
Well, I mean,
because it doesn't hold up.
Can't be. Yeah, well.
of its time.
Well,
it's
yeah,
of its
but
time.
Like, then you go, oh, How Green Was My Valley? It beat Citizen Kane, so it must be fucking awesome. And it's like, no, it's not very good at all. Like,
Birth of a Nation was of its time. Major League, I agree with Sean. Like, I think in reconsidering Major League, it probably is the best sports comedy since Caddyshack. And like Caddyshack, one,
gave us a plethora of things that are still shorthand for the movie in pop culture parlance, like Very Bad to Drink Joe Boo's Rum, Willie Mays Hayes, all that shit. Playing Wild Thing when the reliever comes out. Like there's a lot of stuff in that movie that I think is still kind of circling pop culture. And then also, like Caddyshack, horrendous sequels. Just fucking terrible, don't even speak about them sequels.
This which is I guess true also of most sports movies.
Yeah, like Slapshot as well, yeah. Now I think about it.
Rocky.
I think 10 is too high, but I would say that Major League is without question top 20.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
Hoosiers at number 15, 1986 Gene Hackman. I feel like this is probably too high in the sense that I think when it came out, I remember it being lauded as this amazing sports movie, with much like Miracle, amazing central performance. I feel like there's been better sports movies since 86, though, that have kind of pushed this down the ladder a little bit.
Yeah, I actually saw this, but I saw it like when it came out. Or maybe saw it on like video when I was a few years after, and I've never gone back to it. So I remember really enjoying this movie and having it be like a personal favorite. But I wonder if I went back if I'd still feel the same way.
I think it's the same thing as Miracle, where Gene Hackman is so fucking good at this movie. Yeah, he's unbelievable.
Dennis Hopper's awesome in it too.
Yep, he definitely is. Like and so, like there are good central performances, but in the end, it is like a pretty standard sport, like underdog sports movie, and it's good. It's a good movie. I would say it's a skosh too high. I would probably have it in the top 30, but maybe not 20th.
Also, a bunch of white guys playing basketball for 2 hours. I mean, come on. Who needs that? Number 25, Moneyball, 2011. Way too low. Moneyball, upon rewatch, might be circling around top 10 for me as far as sports movies go. It's so fucking good.
I'd say it feels about right. The thing that I would generally say is this list did not give enough love to sports documentaries. There are a few in the top 10, but I think the problem with a lot of sports movies is, again, like, it's just like, oh, they're really overcoming some odds here. You believe this shit? You know, like, and you can manufacture all kinds of storylines like that. But when you tell the actual stories of you know, the Thrill in Manila, or no, that's not what When We Were Kings about. That's the Rumble in the Jungle.
Rumble in the Jungle, yeah.
Yeah. Or the Red
Army.
Are you
saying that the drama in Moneyball was sort of manufactured a little bit as far as like the A's going on that streak and stuff? Because I love the movie because it takes us into places in the sports world we haven't explored before. And Pitt's great. Like Pitt should have won the Oscar.
He is really good in it. But what I would say is, I think this movie took the wrong lessons from the source material, where they were like, "Oh, look at how great this big streak is that got us back into it." And it's like, yeah, but like, they should have had a scene where Pitt's like, "It doesn't fucking matter that we won 25 games in a row or whatever it is. It matters." That like
it's the friends we made along the way.
Well, no, it's the process. It's all about the process. It's like, you know, I don't know what the baseball equivalent of this is, but like, it's like saying, oh, look how good the Islanders are because they're 40 game PDO. You know what I mean? Mm. Mm-hmm. And the whole point of the book is it's about the process of finding these guys who can get you to a point where you're consistently winning 100 games. And then they're like, oh, we actually – this one season we needed to win 20 straight games to get there.
Yeah. I just want to believe that every trade made is like in the movie where it's like him working two different phones and
– That's right.
And
yeah.
Playing one guy off another guy. Like I want to – I don't know if that's the case. I assume it is because it was in the book. But like that'd be fucking wonderful if that's how trades happen.
I don't think
I've
it is anymore.
I've never seen that movie with –
Right, like, yeah. I think it could work that way because Brad Pitt would be like, oh, here's a guy with a 420 OBP, but he's only hitting 260 or whatever, and he could say, ah, I don't know if I really want that guy, and the guy's like, oh, well, let me come back to you on, you know, that kind of thing. But everybody's that smart now, so maybe it doesn't really work that way anymore.
What are you gonna say, Sean?
I did see Moneyball, and I remember going in with like very modest expectations. and being just blown away by how much I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's really
movie.
Good.
Like, that was just and like really good and really funny in a lot of spots, even though it's not a comedy. Like that was that's what really surprised me. So
number 28, Creed. I feel like that's about right for Creed. Definitely top 30 of all time. The thing about Creed is that it's entirely dependent on your feelings about Rocky for the most part. So it's sort of dependent on another movie to be as effective as it is. But I really loved it.
Right. I think on some level it's the Empire argument, right? Where it's like you cannot have Empire Strikes Back without A New Hope. And so to
now you're speaking my language.
And so to say, oh, this is the better Star Wars movie, which I think it is the better Star Wars movie, but I really do have time for the argument of there are like no real stakes established at the beginning of Empire that you couldn't see Empire and have that be the first Star Wars movie and know what the fuck's going on. And it's kind of the same thing with Creed and Rocky. But I would disagree because I don't really like Rocky and I think Creed is awesome. So
yeah, Creed was fantastic. If you had told me before that movie about the scene where they're riding down the street and the music comes on, if you would describe that scene to me beforehand, my eyes would have rolled so far into the back of my head that with like, give me a break. Like how cliche. When that scene happened in the movie, I was 100% all in. Like I was absolutely like, yeah, let's go. When that music hit, I was, that was another one. This is a theme with me is I get in trouble when I go into movies with super high expectations, and Creed I had heard was good, but I thought I didn't think it would be my sort of movie. And it was phenomenal.
In that last fight, when he comes out of the corner and the Rocky theme starts, I was like, knock that motherfucker out. Let's go.
Yep.
Like,
yes. And to be quite candid, man, like Stallone was great in Creed.
He was really good in it.
He played his age. He knew what he had to give to the film. I really thought that as much as Michael B. Jordan owned the fucking room, like I felt like Stallone was sort of the glue to that flick and did
so
a really,
like,
really good job.
That's why the original Rocky worked and the other
Rocky
seven.
Words.
That's right. The original Rocky works because it's Stallone going, I'm a stupid idiot. I'm a dumb guy. I can only do this one thing. And that's the whole movie hinges on like him talking to his turtles, Cuff and Link, for 45 minutes, right? And you go, oh, I get it. Like, I buy that this guy is this desperate and this, like, because he just has nothing else going on in his life. Like, this all checks out for me.
Right.
And then the rest of them were like, oh, Rocky actually, like, there's a scene where Rocky cures cancer and he, you know, he has a robot butler and all this. And it's like, no, this isn't what this movie franchise should be about. But it made Stallone a bunch of money. So, of course, he, like, feels like that way about it and won him an Oscar. So
he's training Tommy Morrison, like all these things. Number 38 is Fighting With My Family. Sean, did you see Fighting With My Family?
I did not, no.
Ryan, this clearly is way too high for Fighting With My Family.
Oh, yeah.
A delightful film, no doubt. It's got a real spirit to it. Stephen Merchant, who you may know as a partner with Ricky Gervais on Extras and The Office and things like that, directed it. And it's really good. And
he also
Florence
wrote
Pugh
it,
is really
I think.
Good in it. Yeah, it's a entertaining family film about Paige's journey in WWE, but I think part of the problem with this list and other lists is that deal in genre is that if you're going to take a movie about, say, like professional wrestling, that's a family comedy, that's just kind of all right, and make that number 38, and then you put Beyond the Mat way down at like 96 or wherever the fuck it is, you can't be doing that.
Yeah, that goes back to the list's bias against documentaries.
Right.
Where they're saying like a narrative story is better than documentary 99.9% of the time, basically. And I thoroughly, like, I don't know that they've ever made a good narrative movie about professional wrestling.
Not like, The Wrestler?
Oh, you're right. I completely forgot about The Wrestler. Yes.
Yeah,
no,
okay.
The Wrestler
I was gonna say,
is the fucking gold standard. Where was that on the list?
That I think that was higher.
It was right before Creed, I think, when I was looking at it.
No, that checks out for me. That is a fucking masterpiece. And again, a phenomenal central performance. Darren Aronofsky, like, really clearly understood the wrestling business in a way that a lot of these films kind of don't. And so, like, that movie's awesome. But, yeah, I mean, Fighting With My Family, like, beyond the mat, but also, like, Hitman Hart Wrestling With Shadows, not on the list. It's incredible. It's so good.
That holds up well, but when that movie first came out, and like you'd never seen these sort of behind the scenes thing, it was unbelievable.
No, it's a super important movie.
Oh, it's the only reason we actually know what happened in Montreal. Like that's if it wasn't for that, we would still be hearing like the Vince McMahon version, and the fact that the most controversial thing that's ever happened in wrestling history happened when the guy getting screwed over contractually had a documentary crew with him is insane. Yeah.
Like amazing.
I just realized No Holds Barred didn't make this list.
Yeah, that's fine.
But this movie was obviously not one of the top 100 sports movies, but I'll just throw it out because you mentioned Stephen Merchant and obviously Fighting With My Family was The Rock producing it. We recently just as a family watched Tooth Fairy. Surprisingly good movie. I thought that was going to be awful.
He's very charming in it.
I thought that was going to be terrible. And it was actually. I'm throwing that out there. If you're like me, and you've got like the kids, and you're looking for like a family-ish movie, not bad.
Are you going to visit the Tooth Fairy 2 with Larry the Cable Guy, or do you think you'll just keep it at the?
Is that a real thing?
Oh, is it?
Oh my god! Yeah, it's. I wonder if that will be as good.
Slapshot 2, The Tooth Fairy. Couple more. Jerry Maguire was number 42. Too high, too low, just right.
Too high. I don't think it. That's a late 90s movie that I don't think holds up, and there's a lot of them. But that's one where it's like there are aspects of it that are good, and you know, there's a lot. All the shit about like you complete me, who's coming with me, like. Show me the money. That all still lingers. So on some level, like they tapped into something with all that. But I don't. I think that movie largely is forgettable.
I enjoyed it well enough, but like the Patton Oswalt bit about watching that with his brother is in the movie theater is kind of like kind of destroyed that movie for me. And it's
I gotta revisit that.
Definitely.
I don't know that either.
Oh yeah, you gotta seek it out.
South Park episode about Family Guy, I guess, is what you compare it to. Where it's like, oh yeah, I guess that is how every fucking joke on that show works. Okay,
the manatees. Yeah, absolutely. I would say just outright. I agree with you. I think that there are maybe like three or four scenes that are as good as anything in a sports movie, and then there's just kind of a lot of there. In that movie. So I would agree with that.
Yeah. And I remember seeing it and I was one of those people where, and this could happen easier back in the day, but like I went in thinking like, I'm going to watch a movie about football and it's like 10% about football and 90% romantic comedy. And I was like, got me. They tricked me.
That's right. Bait and switch.
Yep.
Kingpin at number 54, too high, too low, just right.
That sounds about right. Maybe a little... one or two spots in either direction, I wouldn't mind about it, but yeah, it's perfectly funny.
I think you could throw it in the top 50 and I'd be all right. Like the Bill Murray shit in that movie with the comb over and every Bill Murray thing that happens in that movie is incredible. And the entire sort of fleshing out of the competitive bowling scene was also really memorable in that flick. I like it. I don't like the part where he has to go down on his landlady. Not a fan of that.
I do not remember any real parts of that movie apart from
I'm not trying to Jamie Bennett here. I'm just saying that part is kind of gross, like intentionally gross, like Farrelly Brothers gross. And then finally, number 73, another comedy. And this is, I feel like this is way low on this list. Talladega Nights at number 73, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good.
Did not see it.
I feel like that's
So
you never saw Talladega Nights?
I did not.
That's a revisit for you.
I mean, I would say of that era of Will Ferrell comedies, it's like maybe solidly in the middle of the pack with, you know, like Anchorman and Step Brothers and that kind of thing. Like those are all definitively better movies, I think. But yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. You saw Anchorman, yeah?
I did, yes.
Okay. There you go. So it's that vibe.
I had to see Anchorman so that I could understand every conversation that happened on the internet for the 15 years and counting since.
I saw a tweet the other day that was like, we got to be thankful for memes because before memes came along, funny stuff was just 15 guys sitting in a circle and loudly quoting movies at each other.
Yeah.
And that's
for years.
True. That's 100% accurate.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, there you go. Very good list.
My two issues, first of all, Youngblood not high enough. And I hate when people do this, when you do like put all this work into a big long list and then people are like, what? No, this? And you're like, no, it's not on the, like, look at the list, dummy. Like if it's not on there, it's not on there. But absolutely inexcusable to leave off Any Given Sunday from this list.
Is that not
that
on the
is,
list?
Did not make the top 100.
Wow.
Did the Replacements make it? Because that's...
No. Hmm. It did not.
Okay. Did Last Boy crazy. Scout make it?
Which one?
Last Boy Scout? The one with
I'm
Damon Wayans, the football player?
No. Not only did Last Boy Scout not make it, it's not even mentioned anywhere in the 9,000 comments from people angry that we left things off the list, so...
The one that got left off, we were talking about just earlier, before the show, was Bring It On, which I thought should be on the list, but... They covered a lot of ground here, and they nailed a lot of stuff. That's fine. And also, they made the best decision of all, which was putting Space Jam at 89, because Space Jam fucking sucks. Save your memes.
Wow.
It's not a good movie.
All right. That was Greg, everyone. Talk to Greg.
Yes, thank you.
The one that seems to have generated the most anger that I've seen is that we had Rudy in, like, the 70s. And I think it's the sort of movie where if you like Rudy, you think it's – yeah, exactly. You think it's one of the greatest movies of all time, or you're like, whatever. But yeah, 70 feels wrong to everybody.
Oh, wait. Who got the Greg Wyshynski on the Power and Influence list number 100? Let's see here.
Greg Wyshynski, actually. That was
– Oh, well, there it is. Yes.
Pride of the Yankees.
My TikTok.
Which, 1942.
That's
like all right.
That's a movie where I guarantee that got voted on because four people have seen it and the rest were like, I heard that's good and it's about the sad thing that happened. Is that right? Yeah, okay, great.
Also, it's okay to keep kayfabe with these lists a little bit. Like, don't put an actual good movie at number 100. That's where, like, Air Bud should
but
go.
There was a whole process in voting and it was based on the note. It wasn't like somebody could sit down and be like, hey, let's finish with a good... And which also means it's not one of those top 100s that you see all the time where you can clearly tell where they made the list and then went in and intentionally moved a few things just to make people mad, where they're like, yeah, okay, let's put we'll put Sweet Child of Mine 14th just so that people flip out. And it's like, oh, okay, we didn't get a chance to do that. But I'm just looking to see, because they have the Rotten Tomato scores. I'm trying to find the worst score. It might be Youngblood. Out of all of them,
to give some praise to this list, I did really like the fact that Big Fan made the list.
Oh, did it?
At 67.
Okay.
Yeah, the Patton Oswalt movie where he's a sports talk radio caller. I don't know if it necessarily sticks the landing in a satisfactory way, but getting there is great. Like he captures that mania of sports talk radio really, really well. I thought that was very happy to see that make the list.
You know what movie was too low on the list?
What's that?
It was a little film called Uncut Gems.
Yeah,
it was in like the top
It was in the 50s. Am I right about that? Or 40s?
It was number 50, one spot ahead of Rounders. Which brings me to my ultimate point about this list: is that if a movie about poker is a sports movie, motherfucker, King of Kong is a sports movie.
You guys showed poker 370 nights a year for several years.
I am not arguing that poker is not a sport. Poker can be a sport. That's fine. Lord knows they showed Texas Hold'em more than the NHL back in the two decades
probably
ago.
Probably did better ratings,
but, well, where's that bar? But – Video games right now are considered to be a sport, an e-sport as it were. King of Kong, one of the best documentaries ever made, in my opinion, should be on the list. Make that your number 100. King of Kong, man. I might revisit that during quarantine. I think that's a flick I haven't seen.
Just for the record,
it's so good.
I did scroll through. You want to know what the worst rated movie on Rotten Tomatoes of everything that was on this list? To bring it back to hockey, The Mighty Ducks, 23% fresh.
Wow, really?
Which is correct, by the way. That's not a good movie. It's a movie for children, and you liked it because you saw it when you were a child, and that's it.
I didn't see it until I watched it with Lozo, and I got to tell you, it's not a great movie.
Not good.
Tremendous central performance by Josh Jackson, but not a good movie.
Basil McRae was excellent. Other than that,
Basil McRae was excellent. That should be on the back of the VHS box.
It should be.
The Athletic Dash. All right, Sean's got a quizaroo to close out this episode.
I do. As I look for it. All right.
Oh God.
Here we go. It's a hockey quiz. Sorry to disappoint you. And it's a pretty simple concept. It's a new format I call "What team does he play for?" And the way this is going to work is I'm going to give you a season, and I'm going to give you two teams that are playing a game during that season, and then I'm going to name a player and ask you which of those two teams that player plays for that season. And with the one caveat that none of these players switch teams in the middle of the season. Like, there's none of this. Like, okay. You don't have to know when during the season the game was played. It's just during this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What team did he play for? And as always, we'll you know, just start off with a few practice swings. Who wants to go first? Five rounds. No, this counts, but you know, we're gonna let you guys kind of warm up, get the concept.
Well, I haven't done a quiz in a while, so I assume that Ryan won the most recent one. So go ahead, buddy. You go first. Or wait, you could kick or receive.
I'll kick.
Okay, so I'll go first. Go ahead, right. Sean. Hit me with who'd this guy play for?
Greg, the season, I guess, is 2010-2011, and the Bruins are playing the Maple Leafs. Greg, who does Phil Kessel play for?
2010-11? He plays for the Bruins.
That's incorrect.
Yeah, no, because he didn't win a cup.
Yeah, he was traded to the Leafs in 2009.
Oh, that's right. They won the cup in 2011,
so
right?
He was in year two of the of his Maple Leaf experience. And
I was basing my answer around when Sagan joined the team, and then I forgot when they won the cup.
In fairness to you, Greg, he was probably matched up against Zdeno Chara, so you probably didn't notice him in this game
didn't
at all.
Didn't see him very much. He was in his pocket the whole game, yeah.
Okay, so Greg missing the easy one is kind of gives us a sense of where this is going to go. But Ryan, it's 2015-16, and the Oilers are playing the Devils. Who does Taylor Hall play for?
15-16. He plays for the Oilers still.
Correct. He does. He plays. Yeah. He was traded into. It was 2016. Was the off season was when we got those crazy games. So 1-0 for Ryan. Greg, back to you.
Might have to start cheating.
Yeah. Okay. It's 2013-14, and the Senators are playing the Dallas Stars. Who does Jason Spezza play for?
2013-14, yes. You said? Spezza... At that point, I think Spezza plays for Dallas.
That was his final year in Ottawa.
Yeah, God that damn sounded it. Right.
So,
oh, well, of course it sounded right to you. It was wrong.
I'm three for three right now.
Here we go. Ryan, it's 2009-2010.
Okay.
And the Wild are playing the Sharks. Who does Brent Burns play for?
Wild.
I believe that is correct. I think it was 2011 when that trade went down.
It's a fucking layup. It's like, when did Kessel play for the Bruins?
All right. You know, I put all this work into five rounds. We might be done after three. This is it. Greg is facing elimination. And Greg, we're going to go way back on this one for your third question. It's 1954-55. The Maple Leafs are playing the Red Wings. Who does Red Kelly play for?
Fuck off.
What were the teams again?
The Maple Leafs and Red Wings.
54-55?
The fact that you asked which teams it was makes me think that you're potentially not locked in on Red Kelly's career as... All right.
Let's see. I was four. Yeah. So... it's a 54-55, Red Kelly, Leafs or Red Wings. I mean, I'll go with the Leafs.
He played for the Red Wings. He didn't go to the Leafs until 1960. I gave you like a five-year cushion on that, Greg. One. This was the Red Wings. This was the Red Wings mini dynasty. Gordie Howe, Sid Abel, and Red Kelly.
I had no idea. I was making the classic pub trivia mistake of trying to play the questioner.
Yes.
Assuming that at some point you were going to be like, "Oh, he's a Leaf," and fucking he wasn't a Leaf. Yeah. We have to keep going to see if I get at least one.
Okay.
Humiliating.
Well, this could be the sweep, though. Like, this could be a 3-0 in three rounds. Ryan.
Who did Nick Lidstrom play for in 2001?
Could be anybody. Now, okay. He was on the Wings or the Maple Leafs, I think.
I believe the answer was Modo.
Ryan, okay. It's 1976-77.
Right, go I got a puncher's chance here.
The Bruins are playing the Rangers. Who does Phil Esposito play for?
The Bruins, right? Yeah, it must be it.
I play for the contract no matter who gives it to me.
Ryan is incorrect, so we didn't move on.
He traded
to the Rangers in 75.
Said the opposite.
Yeah, okay. All right.
USA. USA. Okay. I'll put my rally cap on. Here we go,
baby.
We could
have a comeback here.
It's on.
This could be an all-timer.
Mm-hmm.
Except it probably won't be. But here we go. Greg, let's come back to somewhat more recent times. Mm-hmm. 2001-2002. The Penguins are playing the Capitals. Who does Jaromir Jagr play for?
2001-2002, the Penguins are playing the Capitals, and Jaromir Jagr is a member of the Capitals.
That is correct. He had been traded that offseason. This was his first year in Washington.
This is do you see my body shaking right now? And Ryan's trying to punch me in the head, but it's not working. I'm hulking up.
He has not waved
and
the finger
I'm about to wave the finger. About to give him the two punches in the boot. Here it comes,
all
baby.
Right. Well. Ryan's got a shot to finish this. Second shot to finish it. Ryan, it's 2002-2003. The Sharks are playing the Avalanche. Who does Teemu Selänne play for?
02-03. I'm pretty sure he was still on the Sharks.
That is correct.
Him in Korea jumped, right?
That's right.
Absolutely
that
crushing.
That is it.
Absolutely
so
crushing.
So this is, it is
and that,
over.
Ladies and gentlemen, is what we call the gentleman's sweep. I like Greg think he had a shot there. He, of
just,
course, did
he,
not.
He no-sold the Hulk up like he was the ultimate warrior. The sky dome.
I just took a lousy guy got blown up 2 minutes into the match. Splash.
Greg,
I'm down on
Greg
my back.
Greg still does the BS kickout at 3.5 just so that he can keep his heat, but it's not enough.
All right, give me the last question so I can at least pose to the crowd.
Yeah, the last one
Hogan
for you, Greg. 2006-2007. Penguins are playing the Thrashers. Who does Mark Recchi play for?
2006-2007? Yes. The Penguins are playing the Thrashers?
That's correct.
He's a Thrasher.
He is not. He's
a Penguin,
Pittsburgh Penguin. And I'll give Ryan, I'll give you your last one. 2013-14,
sure.
Devils versus Bruins. Who does Jaromir Jagr play for?
13-14, he's on the Devils.
That's correct.
Yager was only on the Bruins. He started with the Stars and got traded to the Bruins for the Cup run.
So that is a decisive win for Ryan. But Greg, if it's good news, if you're looking for some good news, by my count, the final score or the score is 4-1 and not an insurmountable lead by any stretch. It's
4-1. I feel like we have something to build on for next season.
Absolutely.
Having avoided the sweep. So there you go. I'm such a fucking goldfish. Like, I can't even remember who was on what team last season. It's bad luck.
All right. I may not know a lot about hockey history, but from, I would say, the early 2000s on, I can tell, I have a pretty good idea of who was on what team when.
I'm not a smart man, but I know who Brent Burns played for.
That's right.
Jesus.
Devin Setaguchi trade. Man.
That's Puck Soup for this week. Our thanks to Raycon. Buy the Mirror Buds. They're really good. You can find my writing on ESPN.com, my column, The Wishlist, published on Thursday about Connor McDavid and a great many other things. Also doing WrestleMania content. WrestleMania Laps Fans Guide is out. We have a special guest star making picks that I can't reveal quite yet that you'll enjoy. And then also I taped an episode of ESPN Daily with Mina Kimes talking about the WWE's decision to even have a WrestleMania this year. So do check out my side hustle at ESPN as a wrestling writer.
Sign up for the Puck Soup newsletter. It's right on our Patreon, and a couple of times a week I do a roundup of hockey news, and because there's not a lot going on, other stuff like music and movie streaming recommendations and video games and all that kind of stuff. So people like it.
You can find me on The Athletic as we continue to try to get increasingly weird as we write about sports without sports. I had a piece this week in which a reader sent me a simple trivia question that turned out not to be very simple and almost drove me insane. And it, as of this writing, is the most popular thing that I've ever written for The Athletic. So if you missed it, check it out. If you do not subscribe to The Athletic, you can get 3 months free right now just by clicking on any article and going and signing up for a 90-day trial. It's a good time to do that because there's a lot of good stuff coming. You can read me lose my mind while clicking through hockey reference pages, and we've got some cool stuff coming up. I don't want to give anything away, but we've got something coming probably next week where I'm working with a bunch of guys from different sports, and it's pretty neat. I think people are going to like it. So if you don't, if you're not an Athletic customer, either sign up or at least grab that trial and come check it out.
Yeah, and you made me mental this week because you brought up the Valeri Zalapukin goal in 1994.
Sorry about that. A few Devils fans. I thought you guys would be happy that I named a type of goal after one of your players, but apparently not.
No,
not so much.
No, my therapist convinced me that none of that ever happened, and now it all came rushing back. Also,
rushing back is Valeri Zalapukin.
Russian, there
right?
It is.
Do you see this?
Yeah, like Alexander Cimak. We should mention mailbag coming up on the Patreon. And the second episode of a new podcast in the Puck Soup family is on the Patreon as well. Mise en Pod, the Top Chef podcast with me and Lambert and Ruby, my beautiful wife, is on the Patreon now. If you're not a Top Chef fan, highly recommend checking out this season. It's an all-star season.
It's
very
good.
Accessible.
It's been really good so far.
Yeah, it's been good so far. It is the closest to sports as you'll find in these troubled times. And thanks for all the positive feedback on the podcast so far. It's been fun to do. It's a good little diversionary thing that we've been doing. And Mise en Pod. Check it out. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you next week. Bye.
Later.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.